Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
Well, Miles, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the author of the new book, The Power of Conscious Connection, a Harvard fellow who holds a master's in education and counseling psychology. Welcome to the show, Talia Fox!
Talia!
Hi!
Welcome. What's going on? How are you?
Well, I'm good. I'm thinking about Raphael from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because every time I hear about that, I have this desire for pizza.
Yeah.
And I'm not eating it anymore. So thanks. Thanks for that.
Yeah. And
every
anchovies.
Time I hear about gravy, I want to get some pizza.
I should try that.
Yeah.
This is the thing. When you have this much gravy, you can experiment.
Yeah.
I'll put it on vanilla ice cream. I have not tried that and pretend it's like caramel sauce. I might try that. I have enough time to do that.
Yeah. Last week you were talking about mashed potato pancakes and using the gravy as syrup.
Yeah, exactly.
Sounded pretty good to me.
However you want to look at it, you know.
I'm going to chime in here as a little bit of a guru already, is if you have too much gravy, this is a time in life we need to let it go. I don't know, Miles, what it's going to take for you to change that behavior, but sometimes in life, if it's overflowing, you need to just let go and surrender.
Talia, you
surrender
do not
to our need for gravy.
Yeah.
Right?
release the need for gravy. Release the need for all of these extra things.
Yeah. I'd hate to show you my garage, because you'd be like, wow, you have a lot of paint left over from different house projects. I'm like, no, that's gravy from years past. I will not let them go.
Why is the part of your face below your nose so shiny? No reason.
Turkey grease, probably all the rendered fat from the gravy. I don't know.
And then your shirt sleeve becomes translucent as you wipe it.
Yeah, maybe I will. You know what it is? I think it's just like a waste thing, you know? But the thing is, it's going to be gone within the next 36 hours. I know this. This I do know. So I think we'll be okay. Or maybe I get ill and then I have to stop eating it. We'll see.
What is something from your search history?
I will just present to you the actual last thing that I Googled, which is,
love it,
verbatim, why is it called constant comment T? Do you know the T, constant comment?
Constant
comment? It's this like, it's a tea blend. It's kind of a black tea with a little orange rind in it. They serve it at this coffee shop that I often work at, that I was working at this morning. And I really love it. It's wonderful. Been like a couple years of me being really into it, and then I finally stopped and just looked at the actual name, and it's got me thinking a lot about I've come to really be a believer in like a good name is really, really powerful. And it's a fantastic name, constant comment, because it sounds normal, you know, it rolls off the tongue, it's got some nice hard consonants, and then today for the first time I was like, wait, what does it actually mean? And I think that's a really nice thing about a name, that it can just kind of immediately just be its own sort of universe of meaning.
Whatever it means, whoever created it was an SEO master.
So
probably studdled in the school of on Google's campus for many years. Go ahead.
Who created it, you ask? Well, Ruth Campbell Bigelow in 1945. She created Constant Comment Tea. She was unhappy with a variety of teas on the market, so she created a blend of black tea and orange rind and spices, and inspired by an early colonial era recipe. The new flavor was so popular among her friends that it received, quote, constant comments, therefore giving the tea its name.
Wow. I like
great backstory, great tea.
Yeah. And I like just sort of like the cleverness of the naming. It reminds me of like how they name weed. It's like, man, this one, dude, it's like constant giggles, bro. Because when you hit that shit, everybody's be fucking laughing the whole time. Like, the very, very nice blend you have here of indica and sativa. Yeah. It's so funny that you mentioned this. I randomly just came across on Twitter or something, an ad from Bigelow Teas, it was like a message from the founder of Bigelow Teas.
Well, you're about to turn 40 and they come.
Yeah,
right
they know. They know.
Then I'm like, they've got a clock on every one of us.
Yeah.
There's the big countdown clock at Bigelow headquarters.
They're like, take that Wu-Tang jersey off and here's a cup of Bigelow tea, you old
warm
sweater. Embrace it. Yeah, exactly. But I just, it's funny that now I'm having the Bigelow Tea message be reinforced in multiple ways now.
Yeah.
If you have room in some future episode or even just when we're just chatting, not on a podcast, one of the greatest stories I ever know is about the naming of a product. And I will tell it at some point or I can do it as a bonus at some point. But, it takes a little bit.
Bonus.
Okay.
All right.
The idea that teas were the original weed strain is interesting because didn't they used to call weed tea? Like, wasn't that a thing? I think in one of those like early 20th century novels, I think they keep referring to weed as tea, maybe like On the Road or something like that.
Oh, interesting.
The connection runs deep.
Yeah. Okay. I have no idea. Well, that all makes sense.
Hot damn.
Yeah.
There you go. What, Alex, what's something you think is overrated?
The guy Napoleon. Way overrated.
The guy?
Awful guy.
That guy.
And I saw the movie yesterday. The movie, I think, really doesn't like him. And I really appreciate that about the movie. They make him look like a weird jerk who no one should like all of the time. It's great.
Wait, so what is your beef with Napoleon? Because I'm good friends with him.
Oh,
what's your damage, bro?
What's your fucking problem? No, yeah.
He's moderating the Discord and everyone's very mad at me typing right now. He is famous, but mainly for being a general. And he basically just got everyone in Europe killed for about 15 years for his own personal gain. Like, he didn't really have goals beyond being an emperor. And he kind of ruined the best parts of the French Revolution. He was a horrible guy personally. He reinstituted slavery in France after the revolution abolished it. Like, he should not have any good reputation at all. And the movie just treats him like he's a weird guy who's bad. So that's very good.
Yeah.
The Joaquin special.
Yeah. I weird recommend seeing it just to see how weird it is. It's not a good movie, but it's a lot of just him shuffling around, being unpleasant, and also having a fully American accent. I assume French people are really upset about this movie. It's not a good Napoleon depiction.
Mm.
Like, does he, like, fully American, like, does he have a regional accent? Do they go, like, Bronx with it? Or is it just, is it just speaking TV English?
Hey, I'm invading here and stuff. Yeah, sure.
You fucking talking to Napoleon right now, dog.
Yo, you know who you're speaking to, bro? Because I'll go get him. He's about to head over to Corsica, bro, for his exile. I'll do that shit right now. Did he have syphilis, though?
He had, I think, more than 20 mistresses is the estimation, and probably picked it up.
I just always thought that was like a weird historical myth or true. I didn't know if it was true, but I always, for some reason, people were like, yo, he had syphilis was the thing I always heard about Napoleon. But that could just be based on bad rumors that have lasted for centuries now.
Yeah, we just turned him into like an angry short cartoon character. Like, that's just how history worked there. Like, yeah, he's like, picture Danny DeVito, shout out Get Shorty, but like more angry, and that's who he is. But it feels like he's the first leader that is like similar to the leaders we have, like just a narcissist. Like that is what was driving the whole thing. He's like, have you guys heard about this narcissism shit? Like, this shit goes hard. This is a great way to go through life. And everyone just was unprepared for it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I read a long biography of him last year, and even people in France were kind of unprepared for him because he was very from Corsica, which a lot of French people thought was like separate and different. And they even thought he had a weird regional accent from Corsica. Like people would talk about how he spoke funny from a French perspective. Yeah. And yeah, I think he just decided he was going to be the military dictator of the earth. And that's not like a great goal. I think heroes should have better goals.
Yeah.
You heard it here.
One of those bad ideas to have like inceptioned in your brain that you can't shake.
Yeah.
It's like, I just can't get rid of this notion that everybody should be bowing to me in the whole world.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's not good for anybody, man.
Well, let me finish. Under the threat of death.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's what I've been saying. That's what I've been saying, man. Shit works.
Man, shout out to Ridley Scott, though. He's just on a heater of like making highly watchable, not good movies. That seems to be like where he's at. That House of Gucci thing was like, what, a great time at the movies, and you just like walk away and you're like, man, that wasn't good.
Dude, what the fuck was that?
But like, what a blast. Yeah, I'm very intrigued. I always come away, people are like, it's not good, but like, you should definitely go see it. And that was like definitely my review of House of Gucci too. It's like, not a good movie.
No, but check it out. But check
you better,
it out.
You better go. It's going to make time disappear and stick with you in weird ways.
Didn't he also do a Columbus movie with Gerard Depardieu? That 1492 film? Was that him? Or did he write?
Is that Ridley?
He directed it. Yeah, dude. Yeah. So he's on a fucking tear of being like, yo, and this guy fucking, he was just trying to figure out the new world for everybody, man. Complicated dude. Really weird guy. Had some.
Yeah, this movie made me reappreciate Gladiator, where he could just make up an exciting guy.
Yeah, yeah,
right. Have to depict a guy who's horrible. You know,
right?
It's great.
Right.
Yeah.
Did Gladiator have syphilis though? You asked that like a gotcha question when you asked.
I know. I did it as if everything I said that was preceding it was meaningless because it was mainly just to get to the point. Yeah, but it's syphilis, right? Because now that I read it, they were suspecting that's what led to his death potentially. Like the symptoms that he was displaying there, like plus his, you know, his habits of having many partners. Like it may have been syphilis that took him down.
Yeah. And he was like devolving towards the end, supposedly, like making bad military decisions.
Right.
But that could also just be power and being fame, famous, being fame. What's something you think is underrated?
All right. Get ready. This is more breakfast talk and actually probably related. Just like a straight up salad for breakfast. Nothing.
Just leaves.
No nod towards like there's an egg in it. There's no like kale with a runny egg or anything. Just like just a normal ass depressing bag salad if you got it. That's
TJ's?
I literally had a, even worse, I had a Vons bag salad for breakfast yesterday. Mm. And I was like, this is not ideal. It was mostly because it was like probably going to, it was near the end of its, you should eat this. Life.
Yeah, when the leaves are looking real sad in there.
But I weirdly did feel more good than I like to admit yesterday because of the bag.
Than if you ate like a pile of eggs.
Yeah, exactly. The eggs that are going to kill you.
And so did you put it on a bagel?
Just a regular salad, bro.
Salad on a stack of flapjacks?
Jack, no, man. Just a regular. I did actually, my nod to breakfast was I had like a fucking like cranberry, like kale and broccoli stem salad from Vons and a cup of black coffee.
There you go.
Combined.
So that was my breakfast. Like, ugh.
Yeah, that's grim, man. That feels grim. But I'm on a black coffee kick too.
Grim as fuck.
Yeah.
I've been doing this thing. I got this is just based off of like 25 seconds of YouTube advice. So I don't even know if this is good, but I've been doing, because it's just myself in here, pour over coffee, one cup of pour over in the morning. And then the thing that I saw that I've been trying that I think is working, a cold bloom on the grounds instead of a hot bloom.
So for the bloom, usually you put a little bit of your hot water on the beans, let that kick it for like 30 seconds, a minute. Exactly. And they're saying just to put cold water first?
Like room temp. I've been putting like kind of like, let's see, it's all in fucking centigrade. So I'm trying, like about a, like a.
How do I translate this for
a 60. You're on that coffee shit to the 60. Point that you went to centigrade? Wow.
It's probably 60, 70 degrees. No, 80 degrees, maybe something like that.
Okay.
So it's not like cold.
Oh, okay. But it's not boiling yet. It's not, yeah. What do you do it at? 205? 205 Fahrenheit?
Yeah, that's exactly what my kettle is set to, 205.
I know, y'all. Well, I know. We'll put it in between. How y'all move.
And so the cold bloom, but bloom for longer, like 2 minutes, it's been tasting pretty good. I can't wait to be this new beans, too. Yeah. Think about it.
Are you so sort of thinking about the flavor that are you like hand grind? Like, are you taking a lot of steps to like that all these little things do add up?
I got a nice-ish grinder.
Okay. Damn.
Like one of those, but not, I do have a hand grinder, but I guess I could go back to using it. I threw that into my camping stuff because.
Oh yeah, that's good.
It makes sense there.
Now, I know what a cold and hot bloom are, listener, of course, all right, so what you're it doing, would be helpful.
When you're doing pour over, right, you have, you grounds and you put in the little fucking funnel thing. Uh-huh. And this is like, if you're at a fancy coffee shop where they like, you see them pour out of a little kettle, measuring little the scale. The bloom is at the beginning where you put in, usually 3 times the amount of water as weight compared to the beans. So if you have 15 grams of beans, you put 45 grams of water and just let it sit. And what the bloom does, and that's the time when all the carbon dioxide comes up. So the little, like, looks like a
little foam,
the coffee, grounds are blooming. And so most people do that at boiling hot and just throw it out there, you know, try it cold-ish.
Colder, yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Summer pool temperature.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, like, exactly.
Cool, but not cold.
Yeah, because if you're living out like in Chicago right now, then you open up your tap. No.
That's true. Right. You gotta. I do. I put the kettle on and I just like kind of in the middle of it, grab it out, do the bloom, and then put it back on the on the warmer.
It's like you first hear that little cough of like,
Anyway, that's what I've been up to.
Damn. Breakfast advice.
Breakfast salad, cornstarch in your eggs.
It's because it just happened. Only reason I could tell you this is because it just happened.
And also, mason jars, also underrated.
My phone. Loving my phone. Loving this candle. This candle from Costco that's on my desk.
I don't think I'd be able to get used to like the where you pour the milk over the salad like it's cereal.
Which the
breakfast salad.
And also this Bugs Bunny in Space Jam toy from the 90s that a Yo Is This Racist listener sent.
Wow.
Wow, that looks like some shit you'd win at Magic Mountain like back in the day.
It feels like, I can't remember why we were pretty convinced it was like official-ish.
But yeah, it does look pretty official. It also looks like he has, like he's about to, or like he's just suffered a headshot. There's something about his like facial expression. Like he's like kind of looking up and his mouth is agape. Yeah.
His eyes are, let's just say they seem like they were, it's a toy from the 90s. So I.
It looks like people are selling it.
Oh, no. The eyes are just as fucked up. Okay. Never mind. I was going to say, I thought mine might be the result of.
This one has a tag, though, on this eBay list.
All right. You know. About 20, 10 bucks ish. I thought mine might be the result of, you know, the, we'll say, undercompensated labor who was hand-painting the eyes.
Has no need to give a fuck what the eyes look like when they're putting it on.
Yeah.
Might be perspiring while he puts the eyes on.
Yeah. 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 In some kind of shop.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
And we're back.
We're back.
We're back, baby. We're back, yeah. And so is the COP conference. We're at COP 28.
Oof. Yeah.
It's the initial headlines. I don't know. There was like points during earlier this year where people are like, we've turned a corner. And then the initial headlines. I feel like it's a good metaphor for the climate discussion where it's like you'll get some good headlines, some positive seeming things happening. And then like once you take a closer look, like people are like, it's not good.
Yeah. Because like the whole point is to get, you know, all of the 125 countries together and be like, all right, y'all, how are we going to unfuck this thing? And we all got to agree on something before we leave. Yeah. Like for real this time, we got to do some real heavy lifting. In the beginning, like you said, there were things that made it feel positive, like commitments to seriously cut like methane emissions and like increased funds for countries that are being affected by climate change who are otherwise unable to help themselves because of, you know, the economics of it all. But like you're saying, you start zooming out and the optimism like fucking vanishes like almost instantly. Like for starters, right? The event is taking place in Dubai. Okay. The UAE is a nation built on fossil fuel profits. And the man leading the talks in Dubai is this guy, Sultan Al-Jaber, who he is the head of the state-owned Abu Dhabi National Oil Company. And he is the one sort of presiding over these like climate talks. And I can add even more to this. Prior to the conference beginning, he said out loud at another conference, he said there was, quote, no science that indicated that a phase out of fossil fuels is needed to stop temperatures from rising above 1.5 degrees Celsius. One more thing.
Hey, who are you going to believe? Who are you going to believe, Miles? Are you going to believe the scientists or are you going to believe the guy head of Abu Dhabi State-owned oil company?
Yeah, state-owned oil company. And then only that, there were leaked documents that showed that a lot of these people representing different state-owned oil companies in the Emirates we're planning on using the talks to like generate more business for fossil fuel extraction. Like they were like, yeah, bro, it'd be great because, you know, a lot of people are going to be in town for this. So it's hard to imagine anything significant will be done against this backdrop, especially when the biggest negotiation at the conference that everyone is paying attention to is, are we going to actually start articulating a phase out of fossil fuels? Or right. as some lobbyists would rather say, how about phase down? Because at least down doesn't indicate out forever. Can we say phase down? Can we say phase out? There's a lot of back and forth of that. Saudi Arabia has flatly said that anything resembling a fossil fuel phase out in an agreement, it will be rejected by their delegation. And the way the talks are structured, it takes is one party to fucking scuttle the whole thing. So you're dealing with a lot of fucking variables here that don't spell they're, you know, a good time for Earth in the near future. And then you have the record number of lobbyists of like from the oil gas industries that are there. Last year, we talked about when it was in Egypt, they set a record for lobbyists that were in attendance, like how there were more lobbyists than like people who were from like a single country. For example, like the combined amount of lobbyists that are out actually registered as lobbyists, because there's a ton of people who might not be outwardly saying that they're there to lobby for something. They are basically, they outnumber every country's delegation except for Brazil's. And Brazil has more because they are going to be hosting it in like a year and a half or something. So like, that's why they have more people. But also, the fossil fuel lobbyists outnumber in official indigenous representatives by 7-1. And that means like, they have more passes, lobbyists, than the combined total of delegates from the 10 most climate vulnerable countries combined, including Somalia, Chad, Tonga, the Solomon Islands, and Sudan. And this quote from David Tong of Oil Change International sums it up pretty well. He said, quote, you would not invite arms dealers to a peace conference. Yeah. And that's kind of what we have now. It's just arms fest at the peace fest.
Depends on how lit you want your peace conference to be. But
I mean, I was sort of wondering and reading about this, whether this is like the new Davos, you know, and this is the new just kind of like, we're going to go party and we're going to make ourselves feel important and we're going to kind of cut some deals. And ostensibly, there's this other project that's not actually going to accomplish anything.
Right.
And they're like kind of protecting against something being accomplished. We've had climate experts and environmentalists on the show describe this as an energy industry trade show.
Right.
Essentially.
Right. Yeah. So I went back and looked at, because, you know, COP 28. That's a big number, right? So I went back and looked at like COP 1 and 2 and 3, right? And so, you know, the planks and the things, the basic, you know, things that were being discussed at those in the mid 90s into the early 2000s were basically the exact same, right? COP 2, right? In Geneva, Switzerland was basically about, do we want uniform policies or do we want flexibility? Do we want legally binding midterm targets or do we want larger principles upon which we will all adhere? You know, COP 3 was the big Kyoto Protocol one. COP 4 was like, we are pledging for a 2-year plan of action, right?
Right.
You know, and that's like a 2-year plan of action, 2-year plan of action. I mean, and then, you know, you look at like COP 6, 7, 8, 9, this question of financial assistance for developing countries and this question of kind of how to, you know, developing countries need to use carbon in order to advance their economic principles, but also, you know, they're going to be affected by, like, that is just like year after year after year after year. It just comes up. People say some things, it doesn't get fully resolved. Yeah. So it is kind of remarkable.
Yeah. And it wasn't until last year where they're like, all right, I guess we can put some money together for these other countries.
And so, I mean, it's like, oh, you know, I think
it took you 27 tries.
And it does feel like in this first, the fact that that got accomplished on the first day of the conference did the sort of surprise some climate activists and, you know, probably also then like let everyone at the conference be like, well, we did a good thing on day one. Exactly. So we can just, you know, lobby and party for the rest of the. But can I ask a sort of bigger picture question to the two of you? Just something I've been thinking about with climate activism and sort of, you know, what needs to get done, which is I think we've moved so far past the point where like a single solution or even like a single kind of group, like, oh, the people are going to get together in Kyoto at COP 3 and kind of like governments are going to figure this out. We've moved so far past that idea of like a couple central answers to this that weirdly, it feels like now we're in a, well, we might as well try everything moment, right? Mm. And I think talking to folks, you know, who are active in climate change circles, like, that is where we're at, right? It's like no one solution, no one political process, no one country is going to solve this. We just kind of have to try everything. And I weirdly find a little solace in that like the guardrails, the abdication of responsibility is sort of off for most people. And it's just kind of like, well, we got to try everything. And so, you know, maybe this is a sort of me giving up in some way, but I'm like, if COP accomplishes a, you know, 2% of something, great. Because over here, someone's going to accomplish 2% over here. And that's the only way this is going to happen. It's just like a million different things nudging progress a little bit forward, as opposed to what we were doing for a long time, which was sort of saying like, well, world leaders need to get together and get their act together. And I think that, you know, idea is long gone.
Right. Yeah. The thing kind of reminds me of like those like scenes in like a superhero comedy film where someone's trying to get away in a car and the superhero is just lifting the car from the back so the wheels can't move.
Right.
And like, that's what this feels like. The car's like, it could go forward if these assholes let go and let it move forward. And then so we get these little incremental changes that like are absolutely heartening. I think it's just, and then, but looking at the totality of it, it's like, God, there's still so much energy and investment to basically offset whatever gains there are to continue like the profitability of the extraction. But I think like, to your point, it is better to think of like, that there are many ways to potentially achieve this, whether it's through like how fucking like the dairy industry is working or agriculture, or these other things. And if many of these things can come together, that there, we may find a way here. But the biggest thing is it's these nations, it's these state actors who are really have a lot of control over like the sheer volume of emissions. And when you know that, like, they're like, hey, we're bringing our lobbyists too, to COP28 to represent our gas industries. Like, you're just like, like, how serious are we? So I'm less nihilistic, and maybe I'm just more deeply frustrated.
Yes.
That's kind of where I'm at, I would say.
I'm curious, in looking back at the past COPs, would your sense be if there was some way to quantify like the actual beneficial ideas or, you know, progress that came from each one of them? Like, how do you think, if we were to rank the top 28 COPs?
Okay.
Top 28. Right.
How
COPs,
long do you have?
COP?
Here we go.
26.
Definitive ranking of the top 28.
I'm just wondering, because it feels like putting a meeting together, a meeting of the minds with this as the central goal is a good idea in theory. Once it becomes a place for various companies to strategize, like in the presence of people talking about things that are specifically meant to hem them in, like then it almost becomes like you're building an institutional means for just skirting all the laws and all of the things that we're trying to do. Because yeah, I totally agree. Like, it's not going to be one silver bullet. It's going to be a lot of things, but all of those things are going to be avoided with precision and legal, you know, just millions of hours of legal arguments and contracts and things like that put in by these companies. Because that's what they do. Like sending companies that are focused only on profit, for the most part, like focused only on profit, to be the solution to climate change. It just seems so, it seems not like, you know, well, we might as well try everything, and more like this is actively doing harm. Like it's going to be the thing that will allow us to continue down the road that we've been going down is my concern.
It's like that quote that Homer says when he, like about beer, except it's like fossil fuels, the cause of and solution to all life's problems. You're like, how?
Because there's so many gas on it. What if we?
Well, I mean, that is a huge thing. Like you hear the people, how the lobbyists are speaking about the industries, the industry they represent, and they're like, we have to do this in a humane way. Like, and it's really talking about humane to their company's bottom line, but they couch it in this thing, this argument of like, well, we're going to need fossil fuels to help these other economies get online to get to that point. But really, and I think that's what makes it really difficult, is because it's easy to do this sort of doublespeak and then from that extract like a good headline if you are in the more greenwashing sector of this conference, or you can extract a good headline if you're there to protect the investments or whatever. So it is just kind of wild, though, too, because we're in this like liminal space where like the rich and powerful are still doing their old school shit like, you know, like just self-dealing in full view of the public, but because they were used to like a public that was just uninformed or apathetic. And now people are like, what the fuck? Yeah, hold on. Who's right. running the conference? How many right. lobbyists? And they're like, what the fuck? What's
well, it's
the
a, it's problem? A reality check where I think, you know, over the last year or two in the U.S., you know, I think you could probably tell yourself a story that like, oh, you know, the sort of capitalistic market incentives and the energy and climate change have kind of moved a little more in parallel and are maybe working a little more in sync, right, over the last right. year. And I think, you know, the Biden's bill has a big part of that. And that was the sort of yeah. calculus there. And then you just, you know, to your point, Miles, you get this like wake up call where it's just like a Qatari sultan who's like, the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, I'm an
yeah.
oil guy. like, let's do it.
Yeah. I brought guess what? I just brought the entire global oil industry to my backyard. And then we can kind of like side plan stuff based on whatever else is going on. So, yeah,
one little tidbit just mm-hmm. that I noticed here from this guy that you shouted out, Sultan Ahmed Al Jaber, which is like, he spent his talk at the climate on his first day, his major address, like complaining about how the media had misinterpreted him about his you know, comments earlier about how we'll never be able to divest from fossil fuels. And it's just such a like hallmark powerful yeah. person abdication yeah. of responsibility to then like just get their backs up about being misquoted and then spend their whole time. I feel yeah. like that's like, if you're president of FIFA, that's all you do is oh, just yeah. complain right. about media coverage. Yeah. You don't actually address all the things. But yeah. it's just such a classic
right.
move. And it was just, yeah.
And a classic keynote. You want to yeah. open the conference by talking about your own petty bullshit and right. grievances. That's how people get everybody invested. Yeah.
The keynote address for the conference of the parties to help tackle the issue of Earth death. And you kick it off with, to all my fucking haters. You're like, oh shit. No. This is completely gone off the rails.
Yeah. Amazing. All right. Let's move on to the boring Black Mirror episode that young people today
I'll
live
share
inside.
My rankings of the top cops on the Discord.
Okay.
Definitive. Yeah. 28
top
through
cops.
One.
Yeah.
Top cops. Top cops. Top
Commandant Lesarge cops. From Police Academy.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That guy rules. Just completely oblivious.
Completely senile. Yeah, that's what we need.
Was he Henry from Punky Brewster, or is he just that guy in my memory? No way to know.
I said Lassard. Lassard, I don't know. Yeah. George Gaines, that's what was the actor. I mean, We'll sidebar.
Yes.
We'll sidebar.
Anyways, Henry Punky.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. He was.
Hey, look at that.
He was Henry Warnemont on Punky Brewster.
There it is. All right. There was an article on Axios a couple weeks back that is basically just saying we're going to be living with roommates until we're 50. That is on average. The average age of people who can rent solo is 50 now, because everyone under that age is too poor and the rent is too damn high. It also mentions the baby boomers have, quote, ditched home ownership for low maintenance apartments, which makes it sound like a breezy yeah. lifestyle choice.
This one easy hack.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Find out about this one easy hack real estate agents don't want you to know yeah. about. Sell your house to them.
Sell your house to a corporate entity.
Yes. The one that really jumped out to me, 87% jump in the number of Americans aged 25 to 34 living at home in 2021 compared to the previous decade. Meanwhile, the typical repeat home buyer is currently 58, according to data from the National Association of Realtors. And, you know, there's been a lot of reporting from, there's a New York Times article from last year, there's a Scripps article from earlier this year, about how more and more single family homes than ever are being purchased by investors, which ties into our special episode about private equity companies from earlier in the year. I think Who Killed the Free Ambulance, was that
yeah.
what it was called? Something along those lines.
Just industry by industry, just hollowing it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And there's this one quote in the Scripps News article that I just want to read to you guys word for word. There are billions of dollars, trillions of dollars just sloshing around in the economy looking for places to go. Where do we go? What are we going to invest in? Real estate is a really, really good investment, said Mike Delpreet, a global real estate tech strategist and scholar. It's definitely an issue worth paying attention to. So from his perspective, it's like an issue worth paying attention to.
Scholar?
Yes, he's a real estate tech strategist and scholar at the University of Colorado Boulder.
I wonder if that was like a description he gave to them. He's like, yeah, you can describe me as this. And
yeah, that's spelled S-C-H-O.
I'm a scholar of making that bank.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's S-C-A-L-L-E-R. I'm a shot caller. That's what I meant by that. Yeah, yeah. Scholar, if you will.
S-caller. I'm sorry. Did you not get it?
I'm a shot caller, baby. Telling y'all what to do with these houses. You can get fuck right out of here. I'm a shot caller.
That is ultimately where the term scholar came from.
Of course. It's
just the original shot callers. But yeah, I don't know. First of all, very infuriating for, you know, when most people's lived reality is check to check that the investor class's problem is like, what, how do we unburden ourselves from all these trillions of dollars that came our way during the pandemic?
Just that fucking metaphor. It's just so wild, right? Because it's like you're acknowledging a finite resource like money, and many people don't have it. And like you're likening it to like having like a kiddie pool of just like fucking water sloshing everywhere while people are like dying
of desert
thirst.
I got money problems too, man.
Dude, it's just sloshing everywhere, man. What the fuck am I doing with all this shit? Yeah, like
I get it. But yeah, I don't know. And there's always like an industry person who's like, guys, the private companies buying up single family homes, not a big deal. Like, we're actually not that big of an industry. Like, I barely matter. I suck. Okay. Like, why are you even talking to me? I suck. There's nothing here, which is usually a bad sign when like an industry group just keeps trying to be like, guys, I'm shit. Why are you even?
Right.
No, this is a non-story. But I don't know. It just seems like, when you talk to, like, the New York Times article from spring of last year was just looking at an individual, I think it was Charlotte, real estate market. And it's just, and I've found this to be true, anybody who is thinking about, like, trying to buy a home or, you know, like, this is the number one thing they mention now is that, like, you are going to get scooped by some company. Like, they talk to this woman who is trying to buy a single family home in Charlotte, instead forced to downsize from a rental home to an apartment. And, you know, the home that she wants to buy is bought by Tricon Residential, who owns 1,600 homes. And yeah.
This got me thinking about a kind of bigger sort of story, I feel like, in my life. And I'm curious how you think about kind of home ownership and how I've thought about it, you know, because I do think like I'm of a generation where I did push back, or, you know, kind of, I thought, a really important conversation about like, well, is home ownership the sort of goal, you know? And our parents, that was the thing for our parents coming, you know, and it was like to buy a home. And for, you know, that is the American dream. And I, you know, I think I became convinced, and I kind of probably spouted language along these lines of like, well, you know, that's not the fit for everyone, you know, and maybe it's not the fit for me. And I wonder if we were kind of sold while we were kind of being sold that idea. They're like, no, it's not, you know, it's not.
Yeah, it's
the American dream anymore. There's other ways. In the meantime, you know, that option was just being ripped off the table to begin with. And that, I think, is the real sort of tragedy here. It's not just that, like, everyone should own a home, and that is the most, you know, that is
totally
still the sort of definition of the American dream, but just the lack of options. And I mean, everyone I know, you know, and all the people in the reporting here, the pervading feeling is just constriction, you know, and the inability to even make a choice and have agency and sort of figure out what's best for yourself. And I think that's like, you know, that's incredibly tragic. And I will say, like, you know, this may be taking us a little bit far afield, but I will say, like, when I think about this kind of big conversation that's happening, and it will only build going into next year, about the disconnect between people's economic feelings and the actual economic indicators that are out there. And, you know, Biden has built a pretty good economy, but people still think the economy is terrible.
Yeah.
Housing is the answer to me, right?
Yeah.
You can look at every other, you know, metric about wage growth and inflation going down and all these other things. But if you just like can't get from here to there if you want to own a home. Like, it, I don't think any of those other metrics matter. Yeah.
Or if and you I feel
think
like
that's like a big part of it. I think
yeah,
it's
you're on the verge of not making rent like that.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, homelessness yeah. is like, you know, something that hangs over a lot of people who are still might show up on that as like employed and, you know, but being right. employed and the precarity of like being in a gig economy, you know, role is like that's not a comfortable place to be. And a lot of these things are things that have just changed generation to generation. You know,
it does tie into that sort of gig economy overall, like gigification of our lives that yeah. like, oh yeah, you know, yeah. If you're under 40, like the way you want to live your life is just like improvising every day, you know,
yeah,
like you right. just move around and you rent and you figure this out, you figure this out, you have
vibing
like,
it out. Guys.
I don't think yeah. so. I think yeah. people like stability.
Well, and I think like the cop, what happened to the cop conference is a,
I thought you were going to say the cop on the slide.
What happened to the cop on the slide happened to the
yeah,
the U.S. economy. No,
like, we thought it'd be a good time hopping in there, and it just fucked us up on the other end.
When you have corporations and like private equity companies as like the major decision makers and like designers of an entire civilization for decades, which it seems like we've had for a while now, and like really being the power that politicians have to, you know, push back against and often like listen to, like this is kind of what you end up with, where it's just like their flexibility is the thing that ends up being, you know, unshakable and not like people's security at the end of the day and feeling secure. So it just feels like anywhere where they have fully, where like massive corporations or private equity or, you know, the people who view money as a problem in the sense that they, what to do with all this money being mm-hmm. the problem that right. they're trying to solve. Like when those are the only people making the decisions, like you end up with subtle fissures in like day-to-day life of people who aren't making those decisions that don't look great, don't feel great. And you know, there's a Senate bill that would close legal tax and regulatory loopholes that allow private equity firms to capture all the rewards of the investments in real estate while insulating them from risk. And it has sat in committee since Elizabeth Warren and Sherrod Brown introduced it in October of last year. So it's, it's...
There's like, yeah, I think Ro Khanna also has a bill about banning corporate landlords, because like when you look at it, I mean, this problem is only increasing. And, you know, Jeff Bezos just put like a ton of money into this like new company. It's like an investment company called Arrived that basically allows people to like become sort of small time landlords. It's like, well, you can own a property for as little as $100. By like right. crowd fucking people like that. And that's sort of like this new, like we're just seeing all these entry points to sort of either, because I see something like this, a lot of the people that are defending this company, it's like, well, they're not like one of these institutional corporate landlords like Invitation Homes that owns 80,000 single family rental homes or like Blackstone. They're like, this is actually allowing people just a way to have that kind of security or those aspirations in a way that's realistic for them. And really, it's just more like they're being like, you could be a landlord, dude. Like, you're not going to live here, but you can fucking maybe profit off of this situation.
They're not a Blackstone, more of a Graystone, which is also a massive corporate.
More of a gravestone. yeah.
How many colors are left?
Yeah. Whitestone. Hey, yeah.
Corporate
we're
raiders.
Good, right?
Yeah.
Brownstone.
Yeah. Mr. Brownstone. All right. Well, let's take a break and we'll come back and talk about less depressing things, maybe. We'll see.
Maybe.
We'll be right back.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If
you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. And we're back. And yeah, so first of all, I'd just be interested in hearing, because I think some of the stuff from the world of recovery can be like, I won't like bring it into my day-to-day life because I'm like, well, that's like a different thing. And like people who aren't in recovery won't necessarily understand that. At the same time that I feel like people are talking about like problems that could be serviced from just like, you know, so, some of these things that we're talking about. So I'd love to hear more about like the power hour idea or just like ways that you have seen just, you know, structurally getting people to interact with one another more or, you know, doing that for yourself, how you specifically get yourself to interact with people on a more humane, active listening level.
Well, you know, it's interesting in the context of recovery, it's when you share your experience, strength, and hope. Yeah. And it's okay not to have to share the entire story of your struggles, but the experience, the strength, and the hope is how you live your life on a regular basis that works for you, right? Yeah. And so a big part of the listening is, number one, being able to have some reflective time to be able to know what that is, right? What do I actually... I think about this a lot is what do I do on a regular basis? I meditate. I do some journaling. I think a lot about how I'm treating people. You know, I'm really gentle with myself when I make mistakes, but I try to make amends when I do that. And then being able to share that with other people, but also ask questions to create space for other people to share things about their lives. And a big part of this is when we're connecting with people, there are phases of we don't have to always share the entire war story, right? If it's not appropriate, if it's not the day, if it's not the right venue, but sometimes we throw the baby out with the bathwater. We can still just share little bites of like, you know, I see that you're having this struggle with, I don't know what it is, maybe getting up and going to the gym. The way that this is my strategy for when I don't want to do things, right? I make a call. Or I get I get someone that holds me accountable, or just kind of sharing some wisdom that might be supportive for each other. And so even if we can kind of infuse that into some of our conversations, that's really important. It's interesting, during the power hour, one of the things that I do is I listen so intently to this, in this case, my uncle speaking, that I'm able to repeat and summarize almost everything that he said in the entire 45 minutes. And people always find it to be some kind of superhero power, but it's not. I literally am just fully engaged and fully listening, and I'm not allowing my thinking to interrupt my ability to take in the wisdom that he's sharing. And so there's an actual process and strategy to be that good of a listener so that you can get the value out of the experience and the strength and the hope that other people have. So we really miss out when our listening is tainted.
How would you say most people who aren't being conscious of this are quote unquote listening, right? Because I'll be like, yeah, when people talk, I'm hearing what they're saying. And then that's it. But yeah, what are those finer points that are different about these ways of listening?
So this is almost like a personality test. You have listening personalities, right? So there are people that listen in a very specific way. So for example, I know some people, I'm trying not to mention names here, but I know some people that they're what I call a plugger, which means that like no matter what you say, I don't care what kind of story you tell, they're always going to kind of plug something in about themselves or even plug something that benefits them. Then you've got the fact checker, right?
That's called podcasting. Okay.
Yeah, podcasting, right? So then you have someone that's like the fact checker, where every single time like you say something, they stop you and you're just trying to tell a story that like whether or not it happened in, 1873 or 74 is not the point, but they will stop you and say something like, are you sure that happened then? What I read was that it happened in, and it's like, that's not
that's
the point of the
story. That's called being a podcast listener.
This is all part of podcast. Okay.
And my favorite one is the helper, which I have to be careful about not being that person, but I watch it. And, again, we're gentle with ourselves, is when you're a person that someone is maybe telling you a story or they're trying to get some support and you just jump in there without knowing the full context. And you're like, context, all you need to do is just get up and go to the gym every day and just run a mile. You heard it, right? Mm-hmm. Just eat. Someone told me, I was like, because I've struggled with, I'm always trying to figure out what to do with weight, up and down and just trying to always eat healthy. And it's always been a struggle. So when I ask certain people, they're like, I don't get what the problem is. Why don't you just eat fish and vegetables and then work out every day? It's so simple.
Just
do that. And then they go and they start like eating their donut with like a 6-pack abs. And I'm like, yeah, thanks. Thanks for the advice. but he's not really listening to the context. Like the most important thing that I said in that particular instance was that this is hard for me, right? As opposed to, I don't need the solution per se, but I need maybe a listening ear to work through why I think it's hard specifically for me, right?
Right.
And again, that's what people want, some support. They want you to understand the struggle. They want you to just get their stories and so that they can feel validated. And after they're validated, then maybe they can be open for solutions.
Right. In a way, it just sounds like we're basically decentering ourselves in these interactions. So whether it's our own urge to demonstrate our knowledge of a topic or our own urge to find a way to make this topic be relevant to me or our own urge to share some kind of wisdom, even though that's not what the person we're speaking to is asking for, it's sort of this. Yeah, I don't know. It feels like it feels so contrary to like how we normally communicate with each other, too. Where it's like, OK, what, say the thing about you now? OK, now I say the thing about me and I heard the thing you said. And now it's time for me to see the thing I said rather than just like this much more effortless version of like, OK, so you just voiced a thing that you are dealing with. And now I can add to that by asking you to continue going along that rather than like, oh, yeah, I've been through that thing, too. And then this would have happened. And then that's that. OK, now what? We don't have anywhere to go from there.
Jack said it. It's our urge to be the one.
Right.
We've got to be the one. We've got to be the center of attention. And we all do it in some ways, but if we can be a little aware. Yeah.
Yeah. And I do feel like we might be seeing a generational shift with this, like with younger people. Like I feel like it might have peaked with like baby boomers being like, self-centered, just like very focused on the self and everything, and all the systems were like sort of designed around that. And while mental health is not getting better for younger people, I do feel like in some of the things like the polling that you see, they are kind of acutely aware, like they're more likely to have like socialist leanings, like they're more interested in like even like in the growing interest in psychedelics, which are like medicines or drugs, like depending on how you use them, that kind of dissolve the ego or like take you out of like the self-centeredness of like that way of perceiving the world. I do feel like there are some like glimmers of hope, but I think a lot of the mental health problems that we're seeing is like younger people existing in a world that is designed for this completely different paradigm that has been shown to be very, very bad for the continued survival of the species. But I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like there's a rise in consciousness, but a decline in connection.
Yes.
Right. So it's like we're really conscious about what's going on. I think people are, I mean, the knowledge, you have access to so much knowledge. You have access to ideas and technology and innovations, I mean, on so many levels. But then the question is, what's going to be the impact long term of us really being able to kind of connect and feel interdependent? Because really, I mean, you can put me out in, I like to watch those shows like Naked and Afraid, we're out in the woods. And I would say if they gave me the tool, if they said, well, bring your cell phone and your charger, you wouldn't need the matches, you wouldn't need anything. You have your cell phone and your charger, you can just survive out there and just look it up, right?
Right.
you can just put in, how do you keep warm without matches? I mean, it's like, I, you know, do you want to take your cell phone or do you want to take somebody with you? I probably would just take my cell phone. I feel like I could have light, I feel like I can know stuff.
Yeah.
I'll be good out in the woods. Yeah. But that is a rise in my consciousness, but it'll be, you know, I will underestimate the impact of the loneliness of being in the woods by myself.
What? Yeah. Why is it, though, do you think, from your perspective, why it's become so easy to let go of the connection part? Because the connection feels so much better, you know? And I get that there's probably a lot more of like these sort of, you know, fleeting distractions we have that have probably taken the place. But like, it is kind of, I'm always surprised when I really look back and I'm like, oh yeah, we really don't put much stock into that anymore, when that really was the lifeblood of this species for millennia.
I think it depends on who you have surrounding you, because it can feel better, but it also can feel like a big hassle. It can feel worse. You have a lot of people that are very self-conscious. You know, if you feel like you're being judged constantly, you have people that will just make comments randomly about things. It was funny at the end of the pandemic, and a lot of people were going back to work. And there were these comments that we came in and did some support. There were these comments that people were making. Wow, I didn't know you were so short.
Right,
like,
right,
wow.
Right.
I mean, people were just saying these random things. They're actually considered, in some ways, they can be insults. They can be microaggressions.
Yeah.
But it's like, in that particular case, why did you just say that? Right. Well, why are you just spewing these things out of your mouth that are causing you to alienate yourself or alienate somebody else? And so, again, there's the quality of those connections that I think is really important.
Right.
Human contact is great in theory, but have you smelled some of us? Like, it can be.
Yeah,
it's true.
I had a firefighter put his respirator on while he was in line with me at the supermarket earlier this week. Did not feel good.
Wait, really?
Yeah, he's like, this guy is ripe.
Yeah.
And I was
like, he put his, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, that joke did not land. And you know what? And that's okay. That's why I embrace failure and I cannot be harmed.
Yeah, there you go. And have you read the research around all the stuff in, you know, they say that there's bad stuff for you in toothpaste, bad stuff in deodorant. I have like decided that I'm keeping the bad deodorant and the bad toothpaste, but apparently
it's not
good.
I just use crystals. You just rub crystals on your body.
Don't do anything.
I've decided I am not doing crystals and I'm not doing natural toothpaste either. But
I smell good. Tell her. I smell great.
Oh yeah, you smell so good. We haven't done the show in person for years. Yeah.
I do feel like one thing that I've noticed in myself is that the psychology of like how we interact with one another, modern interactions are much more curated. Like comparing like my day-to-day life with people in the past, like where being in communities where, you know, now I have kids, now I'm just interacting with other parents. And it's not like, well, I choose, they're like top of my list of like people to hang out with. They're, you know, my kids' friends' parents in some cases. And, or, you know, in recovery, you're just thrown into a room with other people who have the same problem as you, but they are in a lot of cases not the person who you would have ever found yourself in the same room with. And in a lot of ways, I feel like that is mimicking how people used to live, right? Like you knew your neighbor and interacted with them whether you liked them or not. And like your friends were based on who was on your, I don't know, bowling team. I think they used to bowl a lot. It's just, you know, but I do feel like part of my problem at least is like trying to be like, all right, is this the perfect interaction? Is this like, you know, putting a lot of pressure on these interactions and like finding the right people to surround myself with is, first of all, it can be beneficial for the reasons that you're mentioning. Like you don't want to surround yourself with toxic people. But at the same time, I think I can also like overly curate, like in the way that a lot of like media now is just like me scrolling through 400 movies to figure out like what the best movie is, when some of my favorite movie watching experiences were just like back in the day scrolling or, you know, flipping past TNT and,
yeah,
you know, a movie's on and you're like, well, that's the movie you're hanging out with for the next hour.
I guess I'll watch 2/3 of this movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I just wonder if, you know, being a little more willing to spend time with people, whether or not, and I guess that's kind of by necessity. If we're spending time with other people like on a regular basis, that's going to happen, right?
Yeah, I think one of the things, if you watch children and animals play together, they seem to have like a system. You know, you'll see little kids, they just go up and they sort of either like they kind of tap each other and run. They just start running and it's almost like we're in the same world and we're just going to run. Or like the dogs, they come up and it's like they have a little sniff going on and it almost seems like all the dogs know and you know you're supposed to like, you know, they kind of communicate with each other. I feel like human beings, we don't really have a system. And we think we do because we just say hello and, you know, give these greetings. But I think we just need to embrace the awkwardness. There is just some interactions that are more awkward than others, but that's okay. If you stay in there for just a little bit longer, you might have, as you were talking about, Jack, you might create a friend that you never thought you knew. This is why we gravitate too much toward people just like us, is we're trying to run away from any feeling of discomfort, any feeling of awkwardness. So if you have a room of people, you're going to gravitate towards someone, you know, you need a starter. They're from your hometown. They might look like you. And we kind of just deprive ourselves of so many relationships that would be nice, but you just have to kind of get past this initial awkward moment of, I don't know what to say. I don't know what questions to ask, but if you've ever had those experiences, it takes just a couple minutes to get there. Then all of a sudden, you know, those people can end up being some really great friends and great connections.
Yeah, especially if you're different, if they're different from you and you're focusing on like what you can learn from them, like then the more different they are from you, the more you can kind of learn from them, right?
Yeah. And in the book, you just have some questions that you ask people. But we have to learn this art of just engaging, putting people at ease and being comfortable with ourselves.
Yeah, because I to your point, like I was at a event like a couple of weeks ago and I was just standing next to a person who was like seemingly, I was like, I don't know what I would have in common with this person. But we realized there was like a mutual connection there and just started talking. By the end, this person who, if I was just going off of the sort of same thing, I'm like, are they from L.A.? Do they kind of like, do we look like we kind of fuck with the same stuff? No, not really. And then by the end of it, they were like super into comedy, super into basketball, like super into like similar art. And that all just happened from just embracing just sort of like the awkward momentum of being like, oh, what else? Like, oh, yeah, yeah. And then just kind of seeing where the conversation leads. And yeah, like almost it proves my own instincts wrong where you're like, I got everybody figured out mostly. And then you're like, oh, no. Like, and then to the point I was talking to my partner, Her Majesty, I was like, we should kick it with them. Like his partner seemed cool, too. Like, what? Yeah. Where did that happen from? And I don't know. I think it's because like I think I've fully let those skills of like being curious about other people just kind of die too. I think it just comes along with age. And I hope everybody listening, look, Jack and I are not just sitting in like dark and like a dank cave, not talking to anybody. I mean, sometimes we do, but
yeah,
there is just like this other, I don't know, very basic part of being a human that I realize I've really let kind of disintegrate in this to a certain extent because of how much like all these things that are at my disposal, whether that be through social media or technology. And I'm forgetting about the, you know, the good old fashioned analog stuff, you know, talking to people.
Yeah.
I spend a lot of time really selling this concept because here's the deal, right? you have a limited amount of time. It's just easier to watch Netflix. It's easier to be on the phone. It's easier not to connect. And so what's in it for you? Why move through discomfort? Why? Because it does take a little bit of effort and work, right, to connect to different people. It's the answer to so many challenges. And I think one thing that we miss in life is that we have these problems, we have these challenges, even in like addiction, like the answer is the connection, right? It's connecting to a higher power, it's connecting to other people. But the answer is like, you have to work it, you have to work it, right? But the benefit is, oh my gosh, look what happened. I surrendered something, life got better and life continued to get better. And now like, you know, I'm transforming my relationships. And at the end of the day, I am much happier because I put in this effort. And so that is the core of this, is we have to learn the skills. And so they're habits that you do every single day that helps us to recover from disconnection.
Right. Yeah.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.